It's showtime.
And we are back live. What's up?
We are back live. This is Cat Fights and Collard Greens. You've got me, Brooke Thomas, and the always mysterious JC.
So mysterious.
So mysterious. I am ready to break down some of your favorite and our, I think, to too many people, surprisingly favorite shows. Also, did you know Basketball Wives was back?
Oh, of course I knew that.
Okay, we're going to have to touch on that next time. Today, we're going to run down a little bit of what's happening with the Real Housewives of Potomac, Beverly Hills, and the recently always crazy New York.
So much happening in New York, but never in New York, which is a weird thing.
Take it away.
All right, starting off with Potomac here. Okay. This feels like a must-do. I'm going to get you right through it, top to bottom. Not sure about you right now, but I'm watching. I get it. A lot of people on this cast have lost, and it's sad. We have two miscarriages with Monique and Ashley. But, you know, great that now Monique is pregnant. She has had that baby. And then we have Karen, who has lost two parents. So it just feels very heavy right now. We have the Rainbow Party, which is a party, not so much a party, but a concept that a baby that is born after a miscarried baby is a rainbow baby. I know it's a lot, but it was a huge plot point because at this party, we have Monique's mother-in-law who called her a heifer some years back, which I don't disagree with, was back. She takes the mic. She apologizes publicly, but kind of retreads on the apology once the party's over. But in that same event, we had Ashley, talk about her miscarriage was something because Candace heard it and walked that bone back to Giselle and brought her another bone on top of that, which was she is saying, Monique said that back in New Orleans, Katie looked like a slave. Miss Dodd, for the correct reference here. And what I really am tired of with Potomac is it reminds me of way back when in Atlanta, the concept of bosses that NeNe kind of hit hard on, which was, you know, the talls and the smalls, they each report to their boss and bring stuff back around. Nothing ever gets resolved. And I just feel like Potomac is just so laborsome to watch. And I feel like it's work, and I have done my reps for the day. I want something new. I want them to have real fun, not like mean fun. A lot of like this show is less fun shady as it is deep cut shady. It's like Basketball Wives light.
It's weird. And, you know, I have to say my favorite thing about this recent episode was the trailer at the end. Right, exactly. I really love Monique this season. I generally always like Monique.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah,
but I don't know. I like her. Also, Candace is like being so
a
like,
monster
and like, low key homophobic with the he said he wanted to do this obsession. So he was drunk and he said something sexual. I don't know. I guess. Do you know what I mean? Like,
you know, yes, you know, I think the issue is
maybe he's not. Well, maybe that's how they joke. Ashley jokes about vaginas.
Right.
I don't know if this it bothers her a little too much, I think.
Here's where I am with that. It was one thing when Robin said that she heard it and it sounded weird. I understand that. Out of the blue, mixed company, we are not that close. That's a word.
Okay.
All right?
Okay.
When you're mic'd in on a show, especially. When someone like Candace takes that information and weaponizes it to try to take Michael and Ashley down, that's when it becomes something else. And for that, she is guilty. 100%. I just feel like Candace, her life is such a mess. She will not rest until everyone else is as sunken and low as she is, even her husband. And I just don't need her on the show, period. I thought Sharice was bad, and look what I was served.
Okay, let's move on to New York.
This is all you. This is New York by way of Miami, by way of Cartagena, by way of all their past, per usual.
Okay, well, I have a lot to say about New York because, first of all, it started with part two of Bethany absolutely lighting Luann up. Okay?
Exactly.
And what Luann deserved. She did. But you know what? Luann did have a good point. She was kind of like, you know, everybody took a break. Ramona left. Tinsley left. I left. And I think that's true. Everyone was annoyed that Ramona left, but I think they're so tired of Ramona that it was like, okay, let's let it slide. We, you know what I mean? Like, we need them.
Right.
They were encouraging Tinsley to leave because she's been so sad. I think it's just that Luann left, and everyone would have let that slide, but she left and then came back upset that in her absence, everyone didn't continue to let their worlds revolve around her. So then she ended up being late to dinner because she was huffing and puffing about not getting a massage until too late because she showed up 2 hours after.
And her hair and makeup.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. This was like, you keep making it about yourself. And so it kind of came back around. I think she deserved that kind of like yelling. It got really, Bethany was not in a good place, you know, but she went off and she always goes off. And honestly, if they only brought Bethany back to go off on Luann when Luann gets tired like that.
Yeah.
I'm not mad at it. There was a lot Bethany was saying that I wish she would have kept talking about.
Oh, you know what? And you know, you're so right. And what's so New York to me, you know, there was a while when New York was kind of slow and boring. It was nothing was happening in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was something about getting Bethany back in the mix. And, you know, it kind of, when they got rid of those replacements over time, like the model and Heather and a bunch of other people, and it kind of got back down to the original group plus a few add-ons, mm-hmm. it's just lit back up. Luann, I clocked her from day one. I was like, this one's different. You know, she's got something else going on.
Right.
And she really is in her own world. It's taking me now 10 plus years to see this. I get it. But Luann is also a vampire. She sucks up everyone's energy, their time, their investment, everything. And she's never satisfied. If you've given her 100, give her 500 next time. And right. You can never, ever satisfy someone like that as a friend, a partner in any way whatsoever.
Okay, wait. Okay, let's move forward a little bit. What do you think about how Ramona was acting about Tinsley's dog? Because I thought it was downright awful. Disgusting.
You know.
She was rolling her eyes. She kept talking about it. She was like, you're going to have to clean yourself up. Like, have you ever had a dog die? Are you crazy?
I know. Ramona is all visceral reaction. She's just hearing it and giving it right back out. She's got no filters, and she's been saying it season after season after season. The thing is, you know you got a problem. Why don't you ever fix it? Ramona, if you want to improve yourself, have a better season, I want to see you in therapy, some real therapy. I don't mean Porsche's backdoor anger management.
And there's this other part of it that they keep talking about Tinsley. Everyone kind of keeps, you know, she must be back with Scott because she's still spending money like crazy. You know what my first thought was? Tinsley Mortimer came to the show with the name, unlike every single one of y'all.
Maybe school them.
Making more
school
money
them.
from Bravo. Maybe Bravo came in with the bag. And she just is making more money off of this shared show.
Thank
the
you.
Rest
and
y'all.
Did you ever think for a second that when she divorced Topper Mortimer for one of the oldest names in New York City, that she left with enough money to buy her shoes and dresses for a while? Never crossed her mind.
Okay.
She leave broke. She got divorced. Okay. And I just feel like they keep forgetting that, which is one reason why I kind of hate watching New York sometimes is they live in such an old New York. You know, I would say if Tinsley for me is back when I was in college, New York, they are living mm-hmm. back in 80s New York. And we saw that in their jazzercise workout stuff. Like you really get a sense of like what the gap is in time between like what their reality is and what their heyday was. It's like, whoa, we're stepping on almost 40 years. You guys get with it. It is 2019. Tinsley is actually not
him.
A problem. She can have a baby at 43 because Kinga had one at 48.
Okay, let her live. They
STFU.
Are so weirdly obsessed with
yes.
her. And she's nice. I don't get it. Like, she's funny. She's nice. She gets
I just sorted. Yeah.
Listen, I'm like, I like her. Okay, but the big banger of this episode, which I thought was going to be what happened at the top of the episode, but that actually wrapped up really quickly. The big deal is Luann versus Dorinda. And I have thoughts and I want to get yours. Let me just, there's just kind of like three topic points in it, okay? So Dorinda got mad that Luann started begging Bethany for forgiveness, even though Bethany was the one who went off on her. And Dorinda was like, you know, she didn't do that to me. I did something that's not as bad as what you did. And she ignored me for 8 months. Then Luann giving a gift to Bethany, which kind of compounded what Dorinda was just saying. And Luann flat out lied and said the gift wasn't about her trying to reconcile with Bethany, that it was just from way before she wanted to give Bethany a gift because of rehab, because of how she took care of her. And then Luann is secretly creating this Giovanni song, which is a master dig. It's old, it's tired, it's unnecessarily mean, and nobody is going to see it because they're all not going, because they're tired of the cabaret.
Right.
Okay?
Right. What if we looked at this cabaret lifestyle as yet another turn in the addictive personality of Luann de Lesseps? Like, you know, first she was obsessed with the count and being a countess. She was obsessed with Tom. She's always been obsessed with the Hamptons. She's now obsessed with this cabaret. And I'm sorry, in the clips I've seen, I'll never go and pay with my own money. I'm not seeing the talent that I would pay money to go to a cabaret and sit through that and witness. She's not doing it for me, you know?
Right. It's a performance version of Money Can't Buy a Class, which she thought people were laughing with.
Exactly. But you know what, though? I would, Brooke. Here's the turn. I would go, and I would possibly pay to sit there and hear her trash the other housewives. And I feel like if that's going to be your lane, like someone else tried to do in another franchise, just do that. Just get a stool and yourself and sit up there and dish and take a Q&A at the end and sign a book. Stop the singing.
But can she do something so direct like that and then still also keep the other part of her personality, which is
a creative personality?
These are characters. These are television shows, and we know that we don't know these real people. We love all these real people, but these characters they play, at least on these television shows, this one is awful. And the aspect of her personality that she's playing is that she pretends she's oblivious to all the bad behavior that comes out of herself. So if she sat on a stool and just dished about the housewives and talked noise about them, then she wouldn't be able to pretend. It would be way too direct. You know what I'm saying? She wouldn't be able to pretend. Well, that she has no idea.
And
what's going
I hear
on.
That, but I feel like I'm, you know, I'm not going to cabaret shows every night, but I do think what happens in between the songs is you have this patter in which you talk about, like, you know, the story behind this or a backstage moment or a secret you didn't know. And I have a feeling that 98% of that is about them anyway. And then the interlude is like a song. And it's like, well, I mean, you're already kind of doing it. Just go there. But I get what you're saying. Having the music in between the dish softens the blow, and it becomes, you know, I've elevated gossip, I've elevated dragging because I'm singing around it. When I saw the video for Feeling Giovanni first, and I was like, this is high garbage. Then I actually listened to the music and I was like, this is terror on my ears. Why does she keep doing this? It's kind of like, you know, Luann could have a great career as just being like an older model, you know, and just take nice photos and model Giovanni all day, but not sing about it. It's like Sierra, you know, like you don't have to sing. You could just dance.
I like her,
you know,
dance
you can
music,
do a lot of other things, you know.
I like her dance music, though. Sierra? Okay, we're getting way
To her credit, it's not a lot of her singing when she's doing it, but you get what I'm saying. She's not trying to give you her voice.
JC.
She's giving you a beat and a look and a pop, you know?
What is Luann's, as we wrap up here, though, because I want to wrap up really quickly here in New York so we can get to Beverly Hills, but what is Luann's deal with Dorinda? Is she jealous?
No.
It is different. There is something.
I want you... And this will take us into, I think, Beverly Hills as well. Which is one thing I really want to touch on. In these franchises, you see it over and over again. This idea of an alpha and a beta.
Okay.
You know, Ramona's alpha, Sonya is beta. Luann is alpha with a couple of betas because she has Barb, who I cannot believe we didn't talk about, but then she also has Dorinda too. Dorinda always wants the acceptance and acknowledgement of Luann, and it bothers her to no end that Bethany is always put above her. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
it's but like, Luann I've is seen going this already. Out of her way, though, to mess with Dorinda.
Because she knows she can do it.
Okay.
Because she knows she can do it.
That's
Dorinda
awful.
Dorinda should not even care. And she knows Dorinda has attachment issues. She calls red balloons Richard.
Yeah, you're right. Okay. Yeah, you're right. Okay. Who's the alpha
Monster
and beta
behavior.
In Beverly Hills?
Monster We're in behavior. Provence. We're in Provence. A world
right.
away.
Of Provence.
As Southern California is on fire. They knew this before takeoff, and yet they persisted. That's a whole other issue, if you ask me.
Let me tell you, speaking of the fire, Camille's whole house burned down. And I know Camille has been every bit of awful, but the ever but a necessary Faye Resnick.
Oh, my queen.
Has sat up there and said, maybe this will make her nicer. She said something along those lines. I don't make
my queen.
Words,
my right? queen. Big Faye.
Like, Faye. Her house burned.
Big Faye.
What? What you doing?
You know, Faye has got all the secrets locked up. Don't come for Faye.
Listen,
don't do it.
Make Faye
I need Faye full time on this show. But like, you know, they're literally in that van going to the airport. Like, oh my God! And about to drag Camille, but then she comes on and says, "Oh my house. Oh, we shouldn't drag her then. You know, let's not do it." So they get to Provence, and it's clear from jump they are coming for Erica. But what they hate about it is Erica sees the attack before it comes down.
Mm-hmm.
Teddy and Kyle get drunk, but this is a conversation they wanted to have sober or not drunk. They have it one time at the restaurant. You would think it squashed.
And it was obsessive at the restaurant.
Obsessive.
A yes or no question 77 times.
Yes.
And they wouldn't let it go because Kyle is mad at Lisa, but scared to say it because Lisa was right.
Lisa Rinna, yes.
Sister Kim was in the wrong. Lisa hadn't gotten to say it to her. She said it to her, embarrassed her at her niece's party. And somehow they want this to be about Erica.
They want Erica to pile on Rinna. And Erica is saying this, if that's your lightweight, you handle that. I'm not here to catch your bodies. Teddy is though.
Okay.
And then it's like, well, okay. You know what? I've seen this already. It's called Lisa Vanderpump with her puppets, Brandy and Kyle. And you know, the thing about Kyle is I've been saying for so long, Kyle is perhaps a bigger monster than Lisa Vanderpump because Kyle likes to throw the rocks and hide her hands. I'm not sure if you clocked this, but before that episode aired, she was all over social media apologizing before the episode came on. Like, I took it too far. I was drunk. I was this. I was that. No, you were always that petty. You were always that vindictive. You were always that backbiting. The alcohol brought out the real you. And the impressions, if you were at that table and she came for you, I hope you clocked that because that's what Kyle is doing behind your back. She's on the show saying, I love you. I'm there for you. We're sisters, yada, yada, yada. She is dragging you in Beverly Hills. Dorit making so much sense in this episode.
For
she has risen in
Dorit
my ranks.
Dorit has risen in my ranks, too. And Teddy has gone down. I know Teddy.
You like Teddy?
You know I have always liked Teddy. You know I always defend Teddy. I think Teddy is always technically right.
Oh God!
I think she gets ganged up on. This episode, Teddy was insufferable, and I was the whole time I was thinking, "Oh my goodness, Jay was right."
Yeah, you know
the
what?
The whole time, JC.
I did like the looks of Teddy at first. I will admit that. Hey, I'm human. But as time wore on, I'm like, you know what? There is nothing there. You and this husband, it doesn't work for me. You know the kids, house, none of it works. And I just think about the people who've been blown over in the past, perhaps because they came for Kyle. I'm thinking of Carlton a few years back, the South African witch. But like, we just need some other texture in this show. And regarding Teddy, it's like she really is, as Dorit called it, her henchwoman. And when Dorit went deep in the bag and brought all the mess out, you know, Kyle does her makeup, loans her clothes, you know, tells her when to show up. I'm like,
yo, that
pop
was
it,
so much
pop
shade.
It, pop it, pop it. But it's fact. It's fact.
That was,
and it's like,
so
you
want to
sit here and come for PK and my husband and boy George, come for it. But I see what you're doing too.
I see what you're doing too.
You know,
that was so shady.
That was, I loved it though. Hun. I was like, bring it all the receipts. It's time. Proof of payment. Let's go. But,
oh my God, that was so shady.
It's, and I just felt like they had this weight over the entire trip that, you know, Denise and Camille, well, who cares? Denise was back in Southern California and all the homes are on fire. And then what does Teddy do when they have the real big, like, knowledge that Camille's house is on fire? She comes in like, oh my gosh, one of my friends, her home caught fire. It's like, stop making this about you. Someone we all know is directly impacted. Go back to bed.
Right.
Cannot deal with Teddy.
My trainer lost and she doesn't know. It was insufferable. They need to leave Erica Jane alone.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know what? I want Erica to just get them together one good time so they can just see what really, and I don't mean like at the reunion with Teddy. I mean, get her together the way I know she can. She's from Atlanta. Just wrap them up.
You know what though? She does little things and it just tears them up. Like when they were sitting at breakfast, she said she wasn't feeling good.
Yes.
She was not trying to talk. They said, oh, I have this plan for, Kyle was like, I have this plan for this time. So then we're going to go here. And Erica said, which was hilarious.
Yes,
okay.
Yes, yes.
But that ate Teddy up. Like, I feel like so uncomfortable around you. And at some point, I was watching that and I was like, dude, at some point, you have to stop blaming Erica for your
it's
feelings.
You.
You're a grown woman.
It's you.
It's you. So if you have a problem, it shouldn't be Erica's responsibility to fix it. Maybe you should work on something. Maybe you should think about why this bothers you. Maybe it's not just her. Maybe you should stop letting another person affect you so much that you then use that as an excuse to be nasty to her because she sat there. Lisa Rinna was right. She sat there.
Lisa Rinna got her too.
Okay. Oh, God. That women usually make her uncomfortable, that she's uncomfortable, that she feels safe with this group, that she's having fun with this group, and that she considers them her friends. And then they started saying because they were not happy with her answer, you know, her decline to bag on Rinna, they started telling her that she couldn't be happy there,
right?
That she wasn't having fun. Like, you know, it was nasty, and Rinna had to get them together about that.
Yes.
And also in the one-on-one, in the interview segment, when Erica says, essentially, Lisa Vanderpump is gone and we're all happy now.
Yeah.
I fell out.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, I think with Erica and Lisa, you have a bit of that Teddy and Erica dynamic where I think there are things about Lisa that are a lot like Erica. And you don't want to see that every day. You don't want to see the worst of yourself walking around. You know what that's like and who that is. And that, I think,
true.
Part of that energy. Because otherwise, you know, I used to be enchanted by Lisa Vanderpump myself. You know, I didn't see anything wrong with her. I thought that she knew how to get people right, and people don't like being set straight. I understand that. But in the dynamic of this show, Beverly Hills, as I always say, has always been dark. It's just a dark show. People try to make it light and fun, but it's not. And once people start to understand that, I think we can all enjoy ourselves and the show a bit more. Lisa Rinna has done this role. You know, I'm obsessed with production reality TV. Have you watched her?
You're also obsessed with Lisa Rinna.
Oh, another one of my queens. Yeah. She is at that table. She is doing production in the moment. Like, you're saying this, I'm hearing this. What does that mean to you, Kyle? Like, she's really trying to guide the conversation. And then after she literally stirred the pot to a froth and they all run away from the table, she sits Tay down and says, you're not her. You're no one's compass. No one sees you. No one hears you. No one cares. Go to bed. I was like, Yes.
Go light
her up, lay her down, put her to bed. And then Rena has to get out the shower and see what's going on because Kyle, a 50-year-old woman, is running all over this house. She was supposed to apologize to Erica, but found herself bed in between. Yeah. Crazy.
She went in her room to apologize and sat there rubbing her hair awkwardly.
Laying on that bed.
Laying on her bed and continuing the conversation.
And Erica was like, I think tomorrow we should do this.
Okay. And I love the way she shades. Please.
It's like, you know, and I hate to even go here, but I think they want Erica to be as frazzled and, you know, not crazy, but fragile as they are. And it bothers them that they can't get her like that. But when they wind her up, she comes out here with the knives and starts chopping them down and they run away crying, ask Eileen. And it's like, well, I didn't deserve that. But you poked the bear. You poked the bear. Of course you deserve that. She doesn't give you any of that. Remember when she first got on the show and she had that Cartier leopard ring? And then Lisa was like, you know, how'd you get that? And Erica's like, do you know the right people? Because I do. It's like, oh, well, that was handled right away. You know what I mean? And they just don't like being handled directly. I always say if there's ever a way to put all these housewives in a bag, shake it up, and reassemble them, I would love to see Erica in Atlanta. You know, because I think that there is a confidence in the way they conduct themselves when they shade and go after each other that you don't see in other shows. Because, like, in Beverly Hills, they go to such dark places and they fall apart. Potomac kind of does that, too. New York does it, but they get over it. Whereas these other shows, it just lingers and it just gets so old.
You know what? I'm with that. I like that. Because I was thinking, at first I was like, ooh. But you know what? I like that. It would be a good show. And also, it would be, you know, adding a white woman to the cast without the microaggressions that, you know, Kim constantly.
And I will say this. I think in that group of women, Erica could have fun. She could say stuff. She could dress how she wants to dress. She could, of course, eat what she wants to eat. And, you know, do her whole thing. Collab with Candy, whole nine. It would be a redo of season one and two.
Can we go back to something that we didn't touch on too much in Potomac? Just one, just something I want to say. The on the side comment, it was a joke about the hair wrap that Katie was wearing. That was it. She wasn't saying she was a slave master. It was a joke. Also, it was a dumb joke, but it was like Monique level. I got it. I got what she was doing. It was corny. And Candace laughed hysterically in the moment. Also, Katie is, how do I say this?
A free spirit, a wild child.
Different from the first season.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
This is the sort of 180 Luann did. Okay. You know, buttoned up to no buttons. It's kind of how we're looking at this.
Is that what we're doing? Okay.
Another revisit of Potomac. We are really trying to go there with identity on this show in a way that makes me uncomfortable. And I don't know why Potomac has to take on the weight of explaining slavery and Black identity and everything else. It just seems like it's not for me. It seems like it's for an audience not of color. And I don't think in 2019... it should be up to this show or others to do that work. And I think that's also
why
I don't like it.
It is these weird antiquated tropes that aren't so much always real life that they're really trying to like keep alive. And it's like, okay, cool. Sure. You know, if that's your lived experience. But also, Katie did have to come back on Robin because, you know, they sat at that table first and spent so much time low-key shading her for being dark-skinned, but claiming biracial, because she is. She, her dad is a white man. They were kind of shading her for that. Like, we're black. You're black. And Katie was like, I am black. My mom is black. My dad is white. I'm biracial. Y'all are too. And then Robin was like, what? No, I am not. And then Robin got her 23andMe back, and it says, like, what, 65% white?
Close enough.
What did it say?
59%. I said close enough.
59% white. And Katie was so happy to talk about that, and it was just funny.
Well, you know, it's like, it is funny, and it's also something, too, where, like, I feel like these are questions that a viewer who might be white would be wanting answered in their heads, and that's kind of why they went there. It did not need to be a conversation for the rest of us. You know what I mean? And I feel like first season...
Are you talking about the first season?
The first season up until now. It gets in the way of other things that we probably should have ironed out before now. And like, when I'm 80 years old, I don't want my daughter to take me to the plantation where it all began. You know what I mean? Like, okay, this is great, and these are my roots, but like, how about we celebrate me with an all-white party in Atlanta, where I live? Okay. You know, I just kind of felt like, this is for you and the show, and to assert yourself. Like, can we not? But hey.
Also, her mom and the realness in, okay, I don't want to hear
right.
That.
Yeah.
That was so real, and I loved it. Okay, that's enough. I don't want to hear anymore about your daddy. Okay.
But here's what I'm up to.
It was good.
Yeah.
I hope this season gets better. Everyone, a lot of people online keep talking about how good
it is. What am I missing? What am I missing?
Right. And the trailer looks good. I am worried that trailer is 3-second snippets, and those 3 seconds are going to be the only fire for each episode.
That's the story of Potomac and a lot of these shows. They cut that trailer up, and it's like, and then you watch, it's like, where is the scene where she said this? And you don't see it.
Right.
You don't see it.
Right. So
aside, last thing I promise. You know, a while back I met Karen Huger. I told her as a viewer that I believed in her. I want the show to win, but you know, I need you guys to really elevate what you're doing to make me want to watch. And what do you mean, darling? I'm like, well, I don't need to watch this show and feel like everything that I'm seeing is attainable. You know, I want to like see cars that are clean, you know, for one. And I think in that she knew exactly who I was talking about, because this person is a lot of driving on the show and their car is often dirty and it bothers me. My TV's HD, I see everything. And she told me that this year they were gonna bring it, and I'm like,
whose car is dirty?
It doesn't matter. Giselle. And she told me this year they were going to, you know, up the ante, and it's still looking low. It's still looking low.
Yo. Oh, my God.
Clean cars matter. They do.
Okay, take us home. Take us home.
As we wrap up, I think we'll call this the what's the word we all, reboot of Catfights and Collard Greens. Let's call it that. The past is undone.
I like that, because some of you exactly were in on our test run,
our soft launch,
and we like your feedback. And this is
we
here we are,
you. And we're back. It's a new year. We are right in the middle of Potomac, getting ready for a hot summer. Watching Southern Charm, all the great shows will run down for you here. Thank you so much for joining us. Give us 5 stars. Give us comments. Give us feedback. We love it all. And here's to another week coming of more Bravo and more drama and more, hopefully, clean cars in Potomac. Brooke?
That's it. I'm with it. Right. We're going to be watching Southern Charm. We will. We're waiting for it to spice up. We are not going to be watching Southern Charm New Orleans.
What is that? All right, y'all. Take it easy.